Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
Hi, folks. We're here for another episode of Film Study. Today, joined by Vas Larikos from Larikos,
Larikos?
Larikos, sorry about that, Vas. We've had you on a number of times. I should know by now. Really appreciate you joining us again. And we're going to talk today about the free agent market for defensive interior linemen, a kind of a rich source of talent in this this year's crop, and certainly one where the Ravens need some help. So, Voss, thanks.
Great to be here, Ken. Always nice to join you.
All right. Well, let's get right to it here. And you know, there's a number of names maybe that might be out of the Ravens price range, which I'd probably like to talk about first or last, if you like. And you can start with one of your players and we'll kind of go through. But I'll let you choose the format, Voss, since you've done a lot of the research here.
Sure. So I guess there's two or three headliners of the interior class. Chris Jones is the big name, Kansas City elite in all aspects. He's right up there with Aaron Donald. I don't think the Ravens are going to be able to secure him. It looks like he's going to be franchise tagged by the Chiefs. Even if he's not, he's probably going to cost in excess of $20 million per season. Eric Armstead of the 49ers is another big name. He posted 10 sacks last season, probably would be a 5-tech in the Ravens scheme. He's also going to be probably somewhere in the 16, 17, 18 million per season. And the other big name is Javon Hargrave from the Steelers. Very good player. He's a nose guard, can stop the run, a whole lot of pressure, is really disruptive. I thought at 12 to 15 million, he's probably out of the Ravens' price range, but that equation changes a little bit potentially with the news of Marshall Yanda's pending retirement.
Right. Obviously, we're recording this the morning Marshall has announced through the Ravens his retirement, or the Ravens have announced Marshall's retirement. Marshall might have told the Ravens months ago. Who knows? But they're announcing it this morning, and a sad day, an amazing career for Marshall, and ability to walk away from the game at the absolute top of positional play.
Excellent player, top five Raven all time. What a tough, rugged player, consistent, quite a leader. I think we all saw the writing on the wall, and we thank him for his service.
Yeah, I cannot think of another time in Ravens history, even with the great ones, where they were hanging it up and we didn't say, yeah, it's about time. Not in that sense, but the time is right, maybe is a better way to put it. But they let Ed Reed go at the, I think, what was the right time. He was effectively done with it. Ray Lewis walked away from the game after he won the Super Bowl, and there was never a question of him coming back. And from a talent perspective, it was the right time again. And the Ravens obviously moved on from Joe Flacco, I think, at the right time. And obviously it's worked out very well in terms of who they had. Jonathan Ogden was hurt at the end. So a lot of players, it's made very clear from their own play level that the time is right to move on. But with Marshall Yanda, he's a very unusual cat in that the team, the players, the fans are begging him to come back for another year at the top of his game, and he's able to walk away from it. So outstanding career. I had the privilege of scoring every single block of his Hall of Fame career, and I couldn't have appreciated it more.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great player, humble guy off the field. Really just an all-time Raven. I don't know what else more there is to say, but the second best offensive lineman and right up there, and hopefully he'll be putting on a gold jacket in 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very hopeful of that too. But let's get back to the defensive line, because that's what we're here to talk about today. So you mentioned some names. I am still a little bit hopeful that they'll go for Chris Jones, but let's talk about your number one name on the list and who you would like to see the Ravens go after.
Okay, so DJ Reader from the Texans. Not quite 26 years old, really an ascending talent. He's powerful. He's athletic. He's versatile. He can play several positions on the line, although he does have that 6'3", 235 size, so he can certainly stuff the run. According to Pro Football Focus, he posted 36 total pressures and 35 defensive stops last season, and this is while performing as arguably the Texans' best defender while J.J. Watt was injured. He did not have a whole lot of talent surrounding him to help prop up those numbers. I think he would be a fantastic addition to the Ravens, which they really do need some help on the defensive interior, especially bolstering the pass rush. I think he's going to cost somewhere in maybe the 10 to eight, at most 12 million per season, and he'd probably be worth maybe a 3 or 4 year deal.
It is a longer commitment, certainly with a player like Reader. You know, the Ravens have options in house to keep their pass rush at to keep their pass rushers intact that might be shorter. Judon in particular would only really require a 1 year commitment. And the reason I bring this up is because, of course, next year, potentially at this time, they'll be talking about a big contract for Lamar Jackson. And that will, you know, block out the sun on the Ravens cap all of a sudden.
Sure. Jackson, Stanley, and Humphrey probably all going to be in contention to be very high paid at this time next year. When you look at the pass rush, the Ravens were not very effective or efficient, I should say, because they blitz so much. And I think they need to add to the interior in addition to edge, whether that's keeping Judon or going another direction. I have some numbers if I can share them quickly on
sure,
the interior. Williams and Pierce combined for 7 total pressures in 2019, according to Pro Football Reference. That's not great. And Next Gen Stats charted the pass rush win rate, which is defined by beating a block within 2.5 seconds. The numbers were 5.9% for Pierce, 5.3% for Wormley, and 4.9% for Williams. So I think everyone's in agreement. The Ravens need to bolster their pass rush, but not only at the edge, certainly on the interior as well.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with that. And even though the responsibilities of that position are a little different from the Ravens, I thought Williams had a really good year in terms of playing nose tackle in the race car front. And we saw the first real glimpse of him getting to rush the passer as he was intended to do originally. I thought he had some more effective play than that in terms of pushing the pocket. But still, no doubt about it. They do need help on the interior. The team has had effectively 4 nose tackles at the end of the year last year with Justin Ellis and Pecco, Pierce, and Williams, all really being four of their 5 linemen being nose tackles at that point.
Right, and certainly their primary function is stopping the run. But when you look at it schematically, with a lot of the quarterbacks nowadays, interior pressure can throw them off their game, maybe a little bit easier than pressure from the edge these days.
Yep. All right. Well, we don't have to get into all the Ravens pass rush because we really want to stay on the defensive line for this game. But DJ Reader, an outstanding player in his time with the Texans, certainly was their best defender in 2019. And be an exciting free agent to get if they could get him. And I agree with you. He kind of ticks off all the boxes with age being a real key one. I hate paying for the decline of a player. And DJ Reader at 25, I guess he'll be 26 before the season starts or about when the season starts. He checks all those boxes with regard to being a player who maybe is still a year away from prime or in that range.
Definitely. It depends if DaCosta wants to go with a younger player and make it a cornerstone or go with maybe a shorter-term contract, which you have some options also.
All right. So who's next on your list, among other?
Another young ascending player is Leonard Williams, the former 6th overall pick of the 2015 draft. He would be a little bit riskier, I think, than Reader. His play has been a little bit up and down. He averaged more than 4 sacks and 21 QB hits per season during his first 4 years with the Jets. His production dipped at the beginning of last season, and the Jets traded him around midseason to the Giants, where he did start getting after the quarterback better once he went to the Giants. He remains one of the more talented, scheme versatile D linemen in the league. I think he's going to be in high demand with an expected salary of somewhere in the range of about $8 million a year, but he would be a very solid addition, I believe, to the Ravens front.
Okay, well, if he only costs $8 million a year, he's a slam dunk in my opinion. I remember that 2015 draft, and Leonard Williams dropped incredibly into the Jets' laps at number six. I mean, just an outrageous, frankly, value pick at sixth in that draft. And he, I wanted to look at who were the other players in that draft. Go back and see who the top guys. Jameis Winston, of course, drafted number one. Marcus Mariota, number two. Dante Fowler, number three. Amari Cooper, four. Brandon Scherff, number five. It's hard for me to point to a guy out of that group, maybe Cooper, maybe Scherff, that their team is really happy they picked him ahead of Leonard Williams. Maybe the Tampa Bay is thinking, well, we needed a franchise quarterback and we're happy to have Jameis. But, you know, he's certainly been very up and down in his career so far. And the others, I just think that Leonard Williams has been probably the best player of that group.
It's interesting that the Jets traded him. I was actually hoping maybe the Ravens would trade for him last year when they decided with Peters, obviously, instead. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure. It looks like the Giants are kind of pinned in. They traded, I believe, a third-round pick or fourth-round pick, and now they want to re-sign him, but he wants a lot of money. And maybe you're right. Maybe he is more of a $10 million, $12 million player. So we'll see what happens there, but certainly a name to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah, very, very long-armed player, uses those arms well, and that's a lot of his success as a pass rusher. I mean, he's the kind of guy that would probably give a Patrick McCary a lot of difficulty on the inside with those arms and his ability to use his length effectively.
Sure, sure.
All right. Good choice. I mean, I'd love to see him in purple as well. How about in the third?
So I have two. The next two are in more of the short-term mercenary-type contracts. First one is Gerald McCoy, a former All-Pro, longtime Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He's now 32 years old. Last season, he produced 5 sacks, 7 tackle for loss on a 63% snap share with the Panthers. And we remember DaCosta did pursue McCoy last offseason. And I guess he wanted to stay in the NFC South for whatever reason. He's the prototypical penetrating three tech, might be willing to play for a contender at maybe a slight discount off of his $8 million salary last year.
Yeah, McCoy, very consistent in terms of his ability to play a lot of snaps throughout his career. And he's a guy, who would certainly be somebody who'd help your pass rush. Would have loved to have him last year. You know, every year there's additional risk in terms of your buying into the decline phase of his career. You know, this is not a guy who's going to be a prove-it year player. He'll probably be a guy who would sign maybe a 3-year deal he would want this year after the season he just had. But anyway, he's not going to be cheap. Yeah, at least I don't think so in terms of the general market. The only thing that could maybe keep his value down a little bit is the incredible glut of high-value defensive linemen that are out there.
Right. It's an embarrassment of riches this year. Defensive lineman has to be one of the deepest positions, maybe only rivaled by quarterback with this free agent crop. I was thinking McCoy could probably be had on a 2-year deal. I'm not sure after taking a 1-year deal last year, he's going to necessarily receive a 3-year. Maybe 2 years, $14 million with the first year guaranteed. We'll see how the market shakes out. I'm not sure what kind of demand, because it wasn't a great year last year for him. He did regress slightly from the peak of his play a few years back.
Yeah, and I would have expected that, certainly. I think he really outplayed the expected decline that I would have had from him, is how I would term it. You know, a guy who's still rushing the passer as effectively as he did at 32, that's a hell of a continuation. Maybe, you know, if you had to pick a player who's a similar continuation of that level of ability, and Marshall Yanda comes to mind as a guy who's just a hair below where he was at his very highest, but still playing very well at his position. Would love to see McCoy actually as a Raven as well. So that's a good one. I mean, I guess part of me didn't really expect him to go as cheap as he did last year, but
you have to wonder what DaCosta offered. You know, if he signed for $8 million, some of the projections said $9 million was his value for this year. With over the cap, I believe, or Spotrac said $9 million they thought he would receive.
Right. All right. Another good one. And boy, you know, these are guys who, even though there are some negatives in a player like McCoy being age being the biggest, boy, you got a lot of good players here. Let's keep
going. Absolutely. So Derek Wolf, former Bronco, pending free agent, now 30 years old, so he still should have some tread on the tires. He's been very productive throughout his career as a listed as a defensive end in Denver's one gap 34. Posted 7 sacks in 12 games last year. His season was cut short due to a dislocated elbow. He's probably going to receive a 3-year deal, I would imagine, somewhere in the $7 to $9 million range. And he does seem to fit the Ravens' mold as kind of a rugged, tough, just type of player.
You know, if they pick up Derek Wolf, to my mind, they're kind of they'd be sliding him as a 5 tech. I don't think he'd play as a 3 or a 1, obviously, in Baltimore. But I almost think they'd be replacing Wormley to do it. And that's kind of why I don't expect him to do it. We'll see what happens in the draft. But I would kind of suspect, and I understand you're projecting him as kind of a little bit more of a bargain bin player, a little bit more you're buying into the downside and whatnot. I think there's some reasons why he probably doesn't fit the Ravens exactly in terms of what he does. Although I do, you know, he's been a good player and he's been a good, fairly consistent player for a long period of time. I just think, you know, he's not exactly what the Ravens are trying to replace in losing Michael Pierce.
Fair point for sure. The question is, how much do they really use a 5 tech anymore because they're just not in base very often?
Well, I can answer that question for you as it turns out. But they do use a 5 tech fairly often because they play a lot of 3-3-5 nickel. So they go back, even though they're not playing base, they play a lot of the 3-3-5 nickel. And I don't have the exact number of snaps here, but I can tell you for Wormley last year played – see, I'm looking at the full season here, 47% of the snaps. And he played a lot in his own kind of old 5-tech role. And, you know, Pierce played 50% of the snaps and Williams played 55. So it's not like there isn't any opportunity for him there. And I think he'd be valuable in that role. I just think he overlaps significantly with what Wormley does.
Very true.
All right. All right, who else you got on your list?
Okay, and it was really tough to pare this list down because there's so many names and established players out there. I selected a potential bargain signing for the last player to highlight here, and that is none other than former Raven Timmy Jernigan. Ozzie Newsome traded him away in 2017 after he produced some of the best pass rushing stats from an interior lineman during the entire Harbaugh era. He had 13 sacks over 3 seasons with the Ravens, traded to the Eagles, and injuries really derailed his time with Philadelphia. Missed 13 games in 2018, 6 games last year with foot and back issues. I believe DaCosta may be able to reunite with Jernigan on a 1-year, close to vet minimum, maybe $2 million, $3 million, something similar to McPhee's deal from last offseason.
And that would be in my mind a great risk to take. And one of the reasons I love Tim Jernigan is that he was an outstanding under rusher as a in twists. So he would love to come underneath. And oftentimes the advantage is gained by the underneath pass rusher in the twist. He jams himself, he crosses the face of one player, often a guard, sometimes a center, and jams himself in between two linemen while another player disrupts that by looping around him. And that often puts him in a very advantaged position once that other loop continues. And I really love that. And the Ravens, of course, like to run so many games up front, whether it's stunts, blitzes, having players drop into coverage, doing all of the deceptive components. I think he would really fit that. And regardless of what the Ravens do, I really believe that the Ravens are still going to have to maintain a lot of that deception in their pass rush to maintain pressure. I don't think they're going to go out there and get two guys, and that includes returning Judon, who can win a lot of one-on-one pass rush opportunities. I think it's still going to have to be a lot of this deception of coming at you from all angles and really relying on that very, very stout secondary to hold up in coverage as your games get home.
Exactly. I completely agree. It was just having this exact discussion with on our Baltimore Beatdown message boards, and you'd have to retool the entire, not the entire defense, but you'd have to maybe add two more pass rushers, because to sit there and going to say you're going to win 1-on-1 and go to a more vanilla pressure package, you need three. You really need three pass rushers. So deception, I definitely think, is going to maintain and become a big part of the game plan, remain a big part of the game plan going forward.
Yeah, they did so well with it. They spent a lot of money on the back end. It just does make sure they did a great job with Martindale last year, frankly, of leveraging what talent they had to its greatest impact. And that secondary, boy, it's very difficult. It's like pitching and defense, trying to separate the contributions of the pass rush from the coverage ability of the secondary. Very similar in terms of how I think of sports. And it was an outrageously good year from the secondary that also created all sorts of pass rush flexibility for this team. You know, from safety, I mean, it was the most pass rushes ever from Earl Thomas. In fact, it almost matched his entire career at Seattle. You know, they certainly rushed Clark plenty. They didn't even have to play two inside linebackers a lot of the time. They got pass rush from the slot. They got it from LJ Fort when he was on the field. They had two Sam linebackers dropping to coverage. I mean, they just had so many different ways they could approach rushing the passer that I thought it was a masterful job by Martindale to get the pressure he did.
Absolutely. And they should build upon that. At least in my view, they shouldn't now reconstruct and try to go to what they had before, because what they did last year was very effective.
All right. Outstanding. So I like him as a bargain. I hope you're right about the price that he could be had at that. I mean, it makes all kinds of sense in terms of all the other activities that are going on at the kind of the inner planets of the Ravens salary cap situation, to have a satellite like Jernigan, who's, you know, a little bit more of a bargain, come to this team for a 1-year prove it deal. And also, you know, he's a guy, he's 27. I mean, he could easily rejuvenate his career, be gone for a big contract after a good year this year, and the Ravens could like the deal across the board in terms of, you know, you get a player who's on his contract year, you get probably a higher level of performance then, and maybe he signs a contract, gives you a comp pick next year.
Definitely. I think the back issue is what may force him to take a prove-it deal, because back issues with interior linemen on either side of the ball are always concerning. But yeah, he could come to Baltimore, rebuild his value in this scheme, and it'd be win-win for everybody.
All right. So let's see. One of the names, is that your entire list there?
Well, as far as the ones I dug a little bit deeper into, yes.
Okay. So I've got a couple of names on this that come to mind. One of them been talked about extensively is Calais Campbell. What's his current situation? He didn't get signed, did he?
He is under contract currently with Jacksonville. They seem to be in a rebuilding mode, but there's been whispers that they want to try to keep Campbell. He has a $15 million base salary in 2019. Excellent player. And if he is released, he would skyrocket to the top of the list in my mind. An excellent, excellent player.
I find it hard to believe that they're going to keep him. Now, they may be trying to trade him, but he's also 34 years old. So if you're a retooling Jacksonville team, and, you know, he'll be 34 when the season starts on September 1st, would you keep a player like that, pay $15 million a salary? I mean, I know the first thing you try is you try to trade him for some sort of salvage value. So maybe there's a team out there who wants to, you know, pay the remainder of his salary. And I've got to see what that is in terms of base salary for this year. Have you seen it?
It's 15. It's 15. Then 2.5 bonus, which would stay with Jacksonville.
Okay. Well, that's actually a very, very good contract from Jacksonville's ability to get out of it at relatively low cost. And so, but honestly, the other side of that is he doesn't have as much trade value at age 34 with a $15 million base as they might like. So, you know, maybe he goes for a 5, maybe he goes for a 6 in terms of what he's traded for. But I would still think if you're Jacksonville, you want to unload that salary and try and help yourself get the room to rebuild that the Ravens have just enjoyed in 2018 and then again in 2019.
Jacksonville's in a tough spot because they have needs across their roster. Pass rusher might be their best spot with or without Campbell, actually, and they have very little cap space. He would be excellent. Again, very, very stout against the run. He can play all across the line. The sixth most efficient interior pass rusher last season, according to the Next Gen Win Rates. 6.5 sacks, 25 quarterback hits. I think if the numbers work, Jacksonville could restructure before trading to increase the value, as they did with Eugene Monroe when they traded him to the Ravens. I think Campbell could really replicate Trevor Price's 2006 impact in Martindale's version of really a similar version of Rex Ryan's organized chaos attacking scheme.
Right. There are definitely a lot of similarities in terms of the amount of deception used. Campbell, another guy. You really would like to get Campbell on an island, but he's also very effective as the underneath guy. And not to mention, you know, the ability, even at his age, to stun a little bit, to be the over guy on twists. There's so many ways he could be used. The only problem is a multi-year deal with Campbell has some scary cost to it at his age. So it's almost like a central rule of GMing is you don't want to be caught with the old maid on his last contract. and it's the last thing you want to do. So I wouldn't want to like trade for him just to sign him. I could see giving up a 5 for 1 year for Calais Campbell. He comes here, he plays for $15 million because the Ravens really are making a run this year. But he kind of fits then with the Ravens. We need money a year from now to take care of Lamar Jackson and also to shift money just very clearly from defense to offense next year.
Agreed. That would be the best case scenario. I think it's kind of a patch it together, get past 2020 while the window's wide before Lamar's paid in the defensive line. I would lean towards some of the shorter term options. Another player who could be released is Linval Joseph from Minnesota. He signed a contract, I believe, the year before, the year after Brandon Williams. He's sort of similar player in that mold, just a big, hawking, wide body who stops the run. He does have a little bit more pass rush ability than Williams, he's shown. So another potential cap casualty to monitor.
Yeah, he's an interesting one. I mean, I don't know the relative cost of Pierce and Joseph, for example. Pierce is younger. Joseph, you know, has been very good for a long time with Minnesota. Does he command a larger salary than Pierce does, or is Joseph every bit as expensive an option? Because part of me is saying I'd probably rather have Michael Pierce back than him.
Okay. I think some of it's going to depend on what the players are looking for and if they want to make a run. And Joseph's made a lot of money in his career. Mm-hmm. Pierce has not. So maybe Joseph will sign for less. There's a lot of players, a lot of defensive linemen that could help. So maybe DaCosta can earmark a certain figure and offer to, you know, whoever takes it first. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. So let's talk about Michael Pierce for a second in that light. Do you think part of the Ravens' strategy has just been to say, basically, you know, Michael, we want you to take it to the market. We may have a disconnect on salary. We want you to really just examine. It's a common Ozzie Newsome strategy in the past, by the way. You know, what you can get on the open market. And we support you in that effort. And, you know, selfishly, we'll get a comp pick if you're signed by another team for a lot of money. And if you don't like the offer, we'd love to have you back. And you know, find a way, but the highest we can do is, you know, $8.5 million a year for 3 years or whatever they might come up with for a number.
Sure. And they've done that. I think that's what they're doing with Jimmy Smith as well. Pierce, I'm not sure how much they would be willing to go on him. I don't think they want to have two players along with Williams that are primarily run stuffers making big money. Pierce regressed slightly from his 2018 season last year. And I think he also perhaps rubbed Harbaugh the wrong way a little bit when he was out of shape showing up to camp. So I would say it's probably more likely he leaves, but if the numbers work, he could definitely be brought back, and that would not be a bad thing at all.
Yeah, Michael Pierce being still only 27 right now, there's a lot of things I like about him in terms of the likelihood of recovering some of the value between his 2016 to 18 play and what happened in 2019. I would agree, it wasn't a great season. They leaned on him very heavily to do more than he had previously, played a lot of pass rush snaps this past year. I believe he played the most snaps he has in a season to date. So, you know, I understand why his production could have been off a little bit. And he's that player who they nicknamed the Juggernaut, who just seems to have an ability whenever he wants to push a defensive, push an offensive lineman 2 yards into the backfield. And when I say whatever he wants to do, it's like one or two plays per game. He seems to be able to do that in an important situation, in a third or fourth and short situation to try and really penetrate to make a big play.
Definitely. And there's some other names out there that fill that role in that mold. Mike Daniels, longtime Packer, is a free agent. Damon Snacks Harrison was released by the Lions. He was an excellent run stuffer for years. Danny Shelton of the Patriots, a former high-round draft pick, still has a little bit younger, more of a run stuffer than a pass rusher. Marcel Darius was another very stout wide body. There's so many defensive linemen available, and there's even some other ones that bring pass rush as well as run stuffing to the table. I think the Ravens are in a good spot because they need defensive linemen, and it's a great class.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable list of names, and you could just see how that available group would really devalue Pierce slightly. He's hitting free agency probably at the non-optimal time for him. You know, it's a player like him. I wonder if there's a one-year deal he'd rather have. I mean, it's not a prove-it deal in the same sense, although maybe he still has to prove that he recovers something from what happened last year. But it may just be a deferral of free agency year, if you want to think of it that way, with so many big names out there this year. Boy, would it be better to be a 2021 free agent.
Yeah, it makes sense. Bide your time till the market's right, especially with the new collective bargaining agreement potentially setting raises. That's even Namakon Sue, Michael Brockers, who's a 5-tech, Jerron Reed, who had a big season in Seattle, brushing the passer in 2018. A'shaun Robinson is a potential reclamation project who was considered a talented defensive lineman. I mean, there's, I don't know, 15 defensive linemen all hitting the market at the same time. So that would make a lot of sense for Pierce.
Yeah. I realize even Sue was available again. Of course, Sue had just a monster deal that he signed originally with the Dolphins after his time with the Lions. Boy, that is an incredible class of defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, you good job picking first on this. You got the cream of the groups to talk about there, boss.
I always seem to get my favorite shows. Cornerback's my favorite position. We did the cornerback review. We broke down we projected the 53 before the season starts, which is one of my favorite activities. So I appreciate the inclusion on the defensive line group as well, Ken.
We'll get you back for more. It's always a pleasure, Voss, I tell you. So are there, let's see, is there anybody we haven't talked about yet? So we did talk a little bit about Chris Jones, and in terms of he's really an emergent in terms of this, even in this market, in terms of what one might have to pay. And that really brings up the question, with so many other talented alternatives, does the amount you'd have to pay Chris Jones just not make sense? And maybe, are they at a point where the Chiefs will try and get away without tagging him? Now, I guess that doesn't really make any sense. The tag is going to be fairly low for a defensive lineman, isn't it? Talk myself out of it.
Right. The tag would be low. I don't think he's getting out of KC. I think he's their best defender, and they're trying to defend their crown. So I wouldn't expect him. But that's an interesting point, essentially 80-20, or at least taking an 80-20 view.
Yeah.
Maybe not 20, maybe 80-50 or something. But, there's Maybe Hargrave or Reader, which are kind of right up there, a notch below tier two types. Maybe they are a little bit more cost effective than expected.
Well, I would, you know, Javon Hargrave, while an outstanding player who has thoroughly frustrated the Ravens interior for years. I mean, I think when I think about him, I think about that 2016 game on Christmas where he was basically all the Steelers had on that defensive line. And he really, he did a lot in that individual game to get pressure against Jeremy Zuda that was very frustrating in terms of derailing the Ravens playoff bid in Pittsburgh. I just wonder, is he at a high enough level that you really pay him an emergent defensive line salary? He is probably young enough at 27 that you take the risk. He's not, you know, meaning not 28, not 29, such that you're buying in definitely or likely into the decline phase of a career. Those are the ages where I really start to worry about it. 30, I'm even more worried about it. But I do wonder, in this crowd, is Javon Hargrave's salary going to be a little bit depressed?
We'll see. He's a very popular name linked to the Ravens. Many of my colleagues at Baltimore Beat Them prefer Hargrave. When I compare Hargrave to Reader, they are somewhat similar players. Hargrave was slightly more productive. He's also slightly older. He's also supposed to cost a fraction, maybe 10% more than Reader, 15%. But when you look at their surrounding talent, Reader was basically doing it all by himself. Hargrave had Tuitt and Hayward. He had Watt
and Pruitt.
Dupree coming off the edge. He had Bush at linebacker. Their secondary improved. So I think he benefited from the surrounding cast, where Reader was a little bit more autonomous.
Yeah, could not agree more. That's a great point on that. And whether or not I'm sure Hargrave would fit into whatever scheme they'd like to do. He's not a guy you drop to coverage. Anyway, I'm not a fan of that anyway, and it's something that Martindale does a lot less than Ryan did. Ryan would drop anybody to coverage. It's more like what Martindale will do is he'll drop either Sam. Very rarely he'll drop an interior defensive lineman, and he'll rush even from the outside. They had that double outside corner blitz, which is something I'd never seen in my entire life as a fan. Never seen it before for the sack at L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm with you though that Hargrave had an awful lot of talent around him to help him lever what pass rush talent he has.
Sure. So it depends. If a lot of it depends, it's correlated to what's going to happen at edge rusher. I don't think they're going to pay two long-term deals, one on the defensive line and one on the edge this offseason. So DaCosta has a choice to make, but I do think they're probably going to pay one, especially with now $38 million in cap space with Yanda after Yanda's retirement, up at potentially, I believe, $43 million in space if Carr's option is declined. So they have some room to maneuver and to upgrade what needs to be upgraded.
Yeah, it's room to maneuver, but it's, you know, wealth is relative, is a basic precept of economics here. And the Ravens are still not in great cap space relative to the rest of the league. They move up substantially with those additional dollars available, no doubt about it. But there's a lot of teams sitting out there with a big bubble, a cap to spend, and that's going to naturally have an inflationary impact on salaries, I would think.
Sure, and that impacts a guy like Jones. If he hits the market, Indianapolis could come in and offer him $23 million a year and not blink an eye.
Right. Right. All right. Now, any other names that didn't come up here? We didn't really talk too much about Eric Armstead and how he would fit in the Ravens scheme. Did you want to do that, or do you feel like we've covered that enough?
I think he's more of a five tech. Brockers from the Rams is another player that kind of fits that mold. A five tech with some pass rushing juice. Most of the other players are more, you know, three techs or one, or, you know, right up line up on the center. I'm not sure if they want to spend that big money, four or five. It depends, as you said, how that helps out with the stunts and the loops. So Armstead, I don't know if San Fran is going to be able to keep him, but he may be priced out.
All right. All right. Fair enough. Well, Voss, thanks for joining us for the show. And we love having you back. Love having you on whenever we can. Tell us where they can find your work.
Sure. I'm a writer editor at Baltimore Beatdown. And you can follow me on Twitter at Vasilis Beatdown, VASILISBEATDOWN.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Voss. And I would encourage other people out there, if you want to do a film study short this offseason, particularly if it's on material that involves a study you've done. We've had a lot of that in terms of people doing a draft study or whatever. Love to have you on, particularly if it's a new methodology that you've created yourself. Talk through it. I'll ask some questions about it. You'll be effectively presenting it on air, and I really enjoy doing that when folks have something new to contribute in terms of the analyst community. But thanks for joining us, Voss, and we'll see you folks next time on Film Study.
Birdland Sports. For fans, by fans. Find more great shows like this at birdlandsports.com.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
When you rely on the internet for everything, you need speed that can handle anything. And now, Xfinity delivers Wi-Fi speed faster than a gig. Check out our amazing offers on internet and learn about the latest breakthrough from Xfinity. Wi-Fi speed faster than a gig. That's more than enough speed to power all your devices and then some. Go online, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply. Gig Wi-Fi requires gig speed and compatible X-Fi gateway. Actual speeds vary and not guaranteed.